This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Hello and welcome to this week's show of Property Matters. I'm Greg Watson and it's great to be here on mpr.nz today, or welcome if you're listening to this on the podcast. On today's shows, we're going to be covering a bunch of information about pets. Rules have changed recently around pets and rental properties, and that's why we're going to cover off that in quite a bit of detail. We're going to answer some questions about what's allowed and what's not, around the rights and responsibilities of both parties, about pet bonds and so forth. And later in the show, we're actually going to talk about some horror cases relating to pets, or at least some interesting cases relating to pets, because the fact that there are new pet rules doesn't stop the responsibility of people looking after a rental property. So I'm going to summarise an article from the New Zealand Property Investors Federation called New Pet Rules for NZ Rentals, Your Complete Guide to Navigating the Changes 2025. And I would suggest that if you wanted more information, this is quite a good source. It's NZPIF, it's for Property Investors Federation, .co.nz, and it's in their blog about the changes. So here's what they have to say. Finding the right balance between protecting your investment property and meeting tenant demand has never been more important. With the new pet rental rules taking effect 1st December 2025, property investors need to understand exactly what's changing and how to prepare. So this guide will help you navigate the new bond system, understand rights, responsibilities, and make informed decisions about pets and your rental properties. I've got a handy quick summary here, so if you just want the brief version, here we go. The Residential Tenancies Amendment Act 2024 introduced big changes to how pets are managed in rental properties. So as of today, so to speak, and any time moving forward or from the 1st of December 2025, blanket pet bans will be unlawful. Bans in existing tenancy agreements become unenforceable. So landlords can only refuse pet requests on reasonable grounds as defined in the Act. We'll elaborate on that soon. Tenants must get consent to keep a pet, and that consent cannot be unreasonably withheld. Existing tenants can ask to keep a pet, and the landlord must respond in writing within 21 days. Pet bonds are allowed. Landlords can charge up to 2 weeks' rent as a pet bond, which is separate than the regular bond, for new tenancies or new pets in existing tenancies. There is no definition of a pet, so a pet can be any companion animal. Full tenant liability. Tenants are liable for all pet-related damage beyond reasonable or fair wear and tear. All tenants liable. So everybody on a tenancy agreement can be held liable for pet-related damage, not just the pet owner. So if you're a flatmate of somebody that wants to get a pet, just bear that in mind. Disability assist dogs are exempt. These cannot be refused, and no pet bond can be charged for those. So let's understand the new pet bond system. So what is a pet bond? A pet bond is additional security deposit up to a maximum of 2 weeks' rent that landlords can require in addition to the regular rental bond. This helps protect property owners from potential pet-related damage while making it easier for tenants with pets to secure rentals. So when can you charge it? It's on new tenancies starting on or after 1st December 2025, or existing tenancy where a tenant asks to keep a new pet. So if your tenant's already lawfully keeping pets before the 1st of December 2025, you cannot charge a pet bond from now on, really. So there we go. So pet bonds function like regular bonds and must be lodged through the Tenancy Services online system. If the rent increases, the pet bond can be topped up proportionally. You can only charge one pet bond per tenancy, not per pet, but you can set reasonable limits on how many pets are allowed to live in your property. If the pet dies or is no longer living at the tenancy, the tenant can ask for the bond back. If the tenant gets a new pet later, you can request a new pet bond. So there we go. Now, how do you advertise your property under the new rules? So there's guidance from the Ministry of Business, Innovation and Employment. And they should suggest that landlords should avoid advertising properties as no pets by default. And the reason that that matters is because no pet clauses or blanket no pet clauses will be considered unlawful unless you can provide reasonable grounds for refusal. So advertising property as no pets by default could either give the impression you're not complying with the Residential Tenancies Act. It could deter tenants from requesting consent for a pet, which is actually their legal right, and potentially breach the new legislation. So they're suggesting if you're going to advertise, either stay silent on pets, don't mention anything, and just look at the requests as they come through the application process, or you could have pets considered on request, or specific restrictions with clear justification. So we'll talk more about this shortly, but examples would be cats not permitted due to body corporate restrictions, or no large dogs, property size unsuitable. So even if you advertise with specific restrictions, you must formally consider any pet request from a tenant. All conditions for consent or reasonable grounds for refusal must be documented in the tenancy agreement. Now, the pet consent process, what landlords need to know. How does a tenant make a request and what must you do in return? Ministry of Building, Innovation and Employment says, has given advice because the law isn't totally clear. The advice below applies to existing tenants asking to have a pet. New tenants make their pet application together with the application for your property. MB's advice is as follows. A tenant can make a verbal request and the landlord can choose to accept that. The law is clear that a landlord needs to respond in writing to a written request but is silent on responding to a verbal pet request. Unless the landlord is going to give a yes without qualification, that is reasonable conditions, pet bond, etc., we strongly recommend responding in writing and asking the tenant to put any requests in writing as well. Written agreements help to make all consents and conditions clear for both parties and will be much more useful in the event a dispute is taken to the tenancy tribunal. So it's always a good idea to get everything in writing. It's the most sensible approach. If a tenant asks you verbally if they can keep a pet, ask them to send your email or a text message as a follow-up. And remember, you have 21 days to respond in writing to a pet request. So what are reasonable grounds for refusing pets? The law provides a non-exhaustive list of reasonable grounds for refusing a pet request. Some of them includes that the property isn't suitable, so no fencing or a small space. Local rules or bylaws prohibit pets, for example, body corporate rules. The pet is dangerous, disruptive, or has a history of attacks. You can find dangerous dogs under the Dog Control Act of 1996, if you were so inclined. The tenant refuses reasonable conditions, for example, to pay a pet bond, or has broken pet rules or relevant bylaws relating to pets before. So consent can include reasonable conditions, for example, charging a pet bond and the type and number of pets. As I mentioned earlier, you cannot have a blanket no pet policy. When granting consent, landlords can attach reasonable conditions to their approval, which must be reasonable with regard to the nature and the premises and the type of pet. So here's a bit of a list. Charging a pet bond of up to 2 weeks. Requiring pets to be restrained when you lawfully enter the property. Requiring carpet cleaning at the end of a tenancy. You can include a condition that requires carpets to be cleaned to a professional standard at the end of the tenancy, although you can't require professional carpet cleaning. So there we go, a little bit of a play on words. So I'll just say that again. You can have a condition requiring the carpets to be cleaned to a professional standard at the end of the tenancy, but you can't require professional carpet cleaning. Another reasonable condition would be limiting the number of pets, for example, maximum 2 cats. Or whether or not pets can be kept indoors, depending on the property type and pet type. There are some provisions not listed in the Act, but may be sensible for certain pets. One of those would be flea treatment requirements before the tenancy ends, regular garden maintenance if pets use outdoor areas. So it's really important to document everything. Always put pet consent and conditions in writing. Use a pet addendum to your tenancy agreement that clearly outlines which pets are approved, the type, the breed, the number, the pet bond amount, all the conditions the tenant has agreed to, tenant's responsibilities for pet care and property maintenance. So let's now look at tenant liability for pet damage. One of the most important protections for landlords under the new rules is expanded tenant liability. Tenants will be fully liable for careless and accidental pet-related damage that is beyond fair wear and tear. So this means intentional damage, the tenant is liable. Careless damage, the tenant is liable. Accidental damage, the tenant is liable. Fair wear and tear, the tenant is not liable. So what does that actually mean? So this is a significant change that strengthens the landlord's position. Previously, there was ambiguity around accidental pet damage. Now, if a dog accidentally scratches doors or a cat damages carpet, the tenant is responsible for repair costs beyond the pet bond. Because it is pet-related damage, this includes things like a fish tank breaking and ruining a carpet. Just for landlords out there, conduct a thorough property inspection before and after a pet moves in and document the property condition with photos and detailed notes. So let's look at what the law says about disability assist dogs and special exemptions. So assistant dogs for individuals with disabilities are exempt from these provisions, meaning landlords cannot refuse them or require a pet dog. So the key points about assistance dogs is that you cannot refuse a disability assist dog. You cannot charge a pet bond for a disability assist dogs. These dogs have legal protections under disability rights legislation, and tenants do not need to request permission for disability assist dogs. On a note, companion dogs, that is emotional support animals, are distinct from disability assistant dogs and do not have the same legal protections. Good to know. Okay, so then that's just a matter of looking at things like a few updates. If you are a landlord, look at the policies that you use when choosing and advertising for tenants. Check any property-specific restrictions to see what you can do there. Update any documents that you've got. You can prepare a pet application forms and so forth. You can train your team, if you're in a property management company, to make sure that everything is consistent, and review insurance. Some landlord insurance covers pet-related damage and some doesn't. Consider whether those are adequate or liable. Now, if you're signing up a new tenancy, include the pet policy information and property listings. Use pet application forms for interested tenants. Lodge pet bonds through tenancy services online. And ask to meet the pet before finalising the tenancy. The pet is your tenant too. Now, for existing tenancies, respond promptly to pet requests from current tenants. Use the pet addendum process, that is an extra document to add to the tenancy agreement. Lodge pet bonds when new pets are introduced and ask to meet the pet before consenting to it. So what are the benefits of accepting pets? And while some landlords may worry about pets in their properties, research shows significant benefits. There's a larger tenant pool. Around 64% of New Zealand households own at least one pet, and 59% of people who don't have a pet would like to get one. By accepting pets, you can access a much larger pool of potential tenants. Can also be longer tenancies. Pet owners tend to stay longer in rentals because finding pet-friendly properties is challenging. So longer-term tenancies mean lower vacancy rates, reduced turnover costs, more stable rental income, and less time spent finding new tenants. Higher rent potential. Pet-friendly properties can command premium rent because they're in high demand and limited supply. That may change a bit under the new law. Quality tenants. It takes time, effort, and money to care for a pet or properly, and prospective tenants with a well-cared-for, well-socialised pet are more often likely to be good, responsible tenants. There's also the social good. Pet bond changes help. Victims of domestic abuse move on with their lives, as people often stay in relationships to look after pets and then become stuck. Helping these people find pet-accepting rentals allows them to move safely. So then the New Zealand Property Investors Federation, NZPIF, have a bunch of scenarios where, for example, a tenant requests permission for a large dog in a small apartment, or the existing tenant already has a cat before the rules change. The tenant has a poor pet ownership history, or body corporate role prohibits pets. So it's worth going into their website. There's a lot of Q&A on there, and that's certainly a good read. So there we go. So let's have a look here about what else we've had in the news lately about this. On the 1st of December, this is from Radio New Zealand, Parliament picnic marks beginning of pet bonds. Ministers have hosted a pet picnic at Parliament to mark the beginning of new pet bond rules for renters. This article, written late November, says from December 1, landlords can no longer refuse a tenant's request for a pet unless they have reasonable grounds to do so. Housing Minister Chris Bishop said the rule change marked quite a shift given the real unwillingness for many landlords to even consider taking on a tenant with a pet. The reality at the moment is it's a hard no for almost everyone, and what we're doing is shifting that to yes unless there are good reasons not to. The ACT leader David Seymour pointed to the support from Pet Refuge. He said some people delayed leaving dangerous situations because they feared leaving their pet behind. It's worth it for that, if nothing else, he said. Associate Minister Tama Potaka said tenancy services have put huge time and effort into upgrading their IT systems to manage the new bond system. He says, I'm a cat man myself, but I do look after the dogs too, giving them a pat, especially those worker dogs like Hunterways. And Bishop's well-known Samoyed Lady Hawk did not attend the Monday picnic. However, apparently she derailed the initial announcement of this law last year. I can't recall that. Maybe you can. Bishop says a year or so ago she's quite excitable, but I can tell you for free, Lady Hawk is a strong supporter of this policy. Seymour brought along a giant dog owned by his staff, a Leon Burger named Lord Leo, who Seymour dubbed Ministry of Canine Affairs. Leo's been having to live under my desk recently as his accommodation options have just wildly increased. So there we go, a little bit of humour there as well. The new rules were secured, by the way, as part of ACT's coalition agreement with the National Party. Now let's have a look at, I just want to find another article here. Oh, here we go. Still on the pets theme, this article by Eva Gallot of Stuff says a brief history of some of New Zealand's weirdest tenancy disputes involving pets. So just a bit of light-hearted relief, hopefully not to scare you too much. Let's just find the appropriate part on the article here. So this one's the mystery of the sheep carcass and the septic tank. An informal tenancy agreement between two colleagues ended in dispute in Timaru after the tenant attempted to end the agreement but was served a trespass notice and blamed for a sheep carcass left in a septic tank. While the landlords claimed exemplary damages for several alleged breaches by the landlord claimed compensation for damages, including damage to a septic tank and the removal of the sheep carcass. The tenant denied damaging the septic tank or any knowledge of a sheep in it, leaving it a mystery. So how did it get there? The tenant had a goat and acknowledged it had broken a window and agreed to pay for damages, but in the end, the landlord was ordered to pay the tenants just under $1,000. Here's another one, a pet lamb in a Pukekohe townhouse. A tenant was fined around $27,000 for ongoing damage from June 2022 to August 2023, so that's just over a year, keeping three dogs, cats, kittens and a pet lamb in their Pukekohe townhouse. The carpet in the three-story, four-bedroom townhouse smelt bad from pet urine and was infested with fleas. Despite attempting to clean the carpets, the smell could not be removed. The tenants were told to pay just a little under $7,300 for the damaged carpets, but the house was so severely damaged they also had to pay over $12,000 for painting and plastering, as well as over $8,000 for labour and material costs. Man, what a nightmare. This other article here, the landlord revokes cat permission because new tenant has cat allergy. So an Auckland landlord was taken to the tenancy tribunal after withdrawing permission for a tenant to keep a cat because a new tenant had allergies. The tenant moved in during May 2024 and around 9 months after the landlord moved to China for medical treatment. A representative for the landlord arranged the tenancy. The representative approved the tenant's request to have a cat under the agreement that it was under a conditional basis and the cat was to be kept in the tenant's room. The owner of the house returned from China and withdrew permission for the tenant to have the cat in February 2025, saying it was because a new tenant moved in with an allergy to cats and the tenancy ended the same month. The tenant went to tribunal claiming the landlord had failed to provide a written tenancy agreement, failed to deposit the bond with the bond centre within 23 days and breaching the tenant's quiet enjoyment by revoking permission to have the cat. Obviously, things were done poorly in a number of these cases. The tenancy tribunal found that since the landlord accepted the cat in good faith and under a conditional basis, the landlord was within their rights to revoke permission considering the new tenant had an allergy to cats. The tribunal found the landlord did fail to provide a written tenancy agreement and failed to deposit the bond and was ordered to pay $427 to their former client. Here's another pet story here as well. Healthy support parrot disputes myth contamination claims. That's quite a headline. I'll actually read that one out again. Healthy support parrot disputes meth contamination claims. So tenant successfully disputed methamphetamine contamination claims using his healthy support parrot as evidence. The landlord claimed the tenant contaminated the premises with meth during the tenancy alongside damages and body corporate fines. The property wasn't tested for meth before the tenancy took place, but was after the tenant moved out. High levels of above 15 micrograms per 100 square centimetres were found in all of the five areas throughout the apartment that were tested, and levels found in the kitchen indicated meth was manufactured there. The landlord claimed the damage done in the apartment was indicative of meth-fueled behaviour. But the tenant denied the allegations, saying that his support parrot would have been poisoned and exhibited signs of exposure during respiratory issues and loss of feathers. Tenancy Tribunal said the parrot was in good health. The tribunal found no evidence that the tenant had caused the meth contamination and ordered the tenant to pay $200 for damages. Wow, that's a scary one. And the reason that that's scary is because that tenant could then file a case that the house was unsafe when they rented it and potentially get a whole lot of rent back and so forth. Here's another one. Two puppies, $8,000 worth of urine damage. A gang-associated tenant was ordered to pay $26,000 for damages, illegal activities and pet urine during their four-month stay at a Christchurch home. The tenancy began on 30th of June 2023 and ended on 15th of October 2023 after the landlord terminated the agreement. A lot happened in that time, said the tribunal. Police had raided the house and arrested the tenant. They found drug paraphernalia and gang association. After the tenant moved out, the landlord found extensive damage from their two puppies. There was an overpowering stench of urine and carpet and flooring were stained, the tribunal reported. All but one room was contaminated in dog urine, with the tribunal ordering tenants to pay a discounted fee of $7,000 for carpet replacement. The landlord's curtain, beanbags, timber bookshelf and rug were also damaged by dog urine, costing tenants about another $1,000. So the Tenancy Tribunal does have the ability to make these rulings. The best thing to do is have some good insurance. That's something that is a passion of mine, and that all landlords should have very good cover. It is a large investment, investment property. Most owners only have one investment property. So really it's just a matter of doing the very best you can to protect that as much as possible. So I think that's all we've got on the laws relating to pets. It'll be interesting to see how things go. Sometimes court cases need to come along, and in order for people to decide, for the court to make a ruling, and sometimes that goes up to the district court to create a precedent, which then guides many decisions from then on. So with regards to what exceptions you can use, etc., I would just refer you back to the NZPIF website, New Zealand Property Investors Federation. It's got quite a good article there. Articles are fairly widespread, and tenancy services, of course, is always a very good option as well to look at that. In fact, I'll just jump on to tenancy services now. And no, computer's just playing up a little bit there, so I will apologise, but I will know that they'll have some very good and unbiased information there to help both parties, tenants and landlords. And their website is www.tenancy.govt.nz. Otherwise, just type tenancy services and you will find your way to that. So that's all we've got today on pets, whether it's your support parrot, whether it's your three dogs, two cats, and a lamb, or whatever the case might be. The new law does cover the ability for landlords to set boundaries, for tenants to ask reasonably to hold pets, and everything in between. It's been wonderful having your company today. Really do appreciate you tuning in here on mpr.nz. That's Manawatu People's Radio. Thank you to the crew, the team at Manawatu People's Radio, for editing this together. Very much appreciated. You can also find this where all good podcasts are found. Just search Greg Watson and Property Matters. Thanks again, and we'll catch up with you in a week's time.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.